Everyone, welcome back to another episode of Heart to Heart Podcast. I'm Bria.
And I'm Kim.
And today we are bringing you the final episode in our mini series on Black women and sexual liberation and, you know, all those societal themes. So we're very excited to be wrapping up this great series.
Yes, thank you so much to everybody who has listened and given us feedback. I know a lot of the topics that we've been grappling with have not been easy, and some of them are definitely triggering. So we just thank you for bearing with us as we, you know, go through some of these topics and just talk about the implications behind them. Today, we're going to be diving deeper into pedophilia and in particular, how it looks for Black girls.
Yes, thank you all for sticking with us. Definitely serious subject matter, but it's stuff that needs to be talked about. Mm-hmm. So thank you for sticking with us. You guys can find us on Anchor, Spotify, Apple Podcast. Make sure to give us a rating in Apple Podcast. It really helps us a lot, and we love reading them too. So thank you, and let's get into it for today.
Awesome. So I think in really talking about pedophilia and Black girls in particular, it's really important to just name that Black girls are the victims of sexual abuse at disproportionate rates to white girls. It's a phenomenon that, again, has these roots in slavery, and particularly thinking about how Black women have been seen as deviant, seen as promiscuous. This is clearly demonstrated in the Jezebel stereotype. And I think just some important statistics to think about as we kind of start to go into this and dive into this are that 1 in 4 Black girls will be sexually abused before the age of 18. 60% of Black girls have experienced sexual abuse at the hands of Black men before reaching the age of 18, according to a study by Black Women's Blueprint. And for every Black woman who reports a rape, at least 15 do not report.
Wow, those are heartbreaking statistics. And you know, the idea that we, and the facts that we are disproportionately affected by these issues, it's not a dig at anybody, you know, it's not about, you know, who has it worse. This is a terrible issue that affects everyone, but we're just letting people know that Black girls are victims at higher rates. Mm-hmm. And that is showing how Black women are unprotected.
Yes.
Systemically.
Yes.
You know, and obviously we don't want anyone to go through this, but because we are Black women, we're just kind of focusing in on this lens that Black girls, Black women are being affected more so than others. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that in the Black community, it's hard for people to talk about this stuff.
I think
that's the culture of sweeping it under the rug and, you know, letting it go away and or hoping it'll go away, because these things don't just go away on their own. They go away with intervention. Mm-hmm. But that's something that doesn't happen in our community. And I know that we'd love to talk about that.
Definitely. And, you know, exactly as you said, to some degree, the sexual abuse, specifically in the case of what we're talking about, pedophilia, has been normalized. And I think there's a lot of reasons why it has been normalized. But there are really significant examples that I think we can first kind of draw on and unpack to kind of look at this normalization. So definitely, a big one, and something that I know we mentioned in one of our previous videos in the series, is R. Kelly. But I think we can dive a little bit deeper into the situation and kind of really look at how this has played out. So R. Kelly has received allegations of pedophilia and sexual abuse since the very beginning of his career. It was about 18 years ago that there were 2 videos that surfaced of him having sex with underage girls, one who was 13. He was acquitted on child pornography charges in 2008. And then most recently, the film Surviving R. Kelly talked about the more recent victims of his sex trafficking ring and kind of their experiences and what they went through. And to say that there were mixed opinions about what was shown in that docuseries would be an understatement.
People have a hard time accepting that their idols or, you know, people that they love to listen to that are, you know, can be evil and can be sick mm-hmm. and can be perpetrators of very extreme violence. And, you know, I don't even know how someone can watch that and, you know, watch Surviving R. Kelly and hear the stories of these victims and not immediately feel for them.
Yeah.
And not immediately want to delete all of his music off their phone. You know, I think that hesitancy to accept, you know, the truth of allegations, I think a lot of that is rooted in people not wanting to believe Black girls.
Yeah, I think that's what it is too. And again, this is on par with those stereotypes of thinking that Black girls are deviant and more culpable. And those stereotypes are still perpetuated within the Black community themselves, because the reality of the situation is, yes, Black people might be aware of those tropes, but we are also conditioned under this entire lens of white supremacy and how it has casted Black people in such a way. So we are not absolved of thinking any of those stereotypes, and it has, you know, very much seeped into the Black community and has had some effect. I mean, in thinking about the R. Kelly incident in particular, you know, there were a lot of older people who said, well, where were the parents of those girls? So again, we see this tension to divert any blame from the main perpetrator, who is R. Kelly. Also too, some of the girls, because that's what they were, in the docuseries, were often referred to as grown women who sought out Kelly. And so you see two things here. Number one, the adultification of Black girls, which is specifically the scenario in which Black girls are perceived as being older than they are. And then again, blaming the victim for somehow getting herself into a situation where she is now abused. And again, what we're doing is we're diverting attention away from R. Kelly and thinking about what it actually means for him to do this.
Mm-hmm. We definitely have seen a lot of victim blaming going on, you know, in this situation, but also so many other situations. And, you know, even if it's not about a celebrity, I'm sure you can like look at a time and you've heard people say, well, she's fast, or mm-hmm. she was acting too grown, or, you know, she was doing too much for her age. Where were the parents, et cetera, et cetera. Obviously, you know, you want children and young girls to have stable support systems and parents who are, you know, looking at their actions and making sure that they're being safe. But at the end of the day, the fact that R. Kelly was there ready and willing to take advantage of these girls is the main problem.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
There's no way and there's no scenario in which the girls or even the parents, I think, have equal blame to the actual person who perpetrated the crimes.
You are spot on. I mean, at the end of the day, it was R. Kelly who put this whole thing together. And there were even people saying, well, you know, why did his entourage like say something? And yeah, sure, everyone who knows about it is definitely to blame here too. But at the end of the day, R. Kelly is the main perpetrator in this scenario. And again, I think it's interesting how when people have certain privileges, we start to make excuses and we don't hold accountability. And I think we need to get to the point of no matter who you are, regardless of the wealth or affluence that you have to be held accountable for the things that you do. And the community that has supported you and uplifted you should be able to recognize that too. And also to what does it mean for young Black girls to see their parents saying that or seeing adults saying that? Because then guess what? If they're victims of sexual abuse, they're going to think it was their fault and they're not going to come forward. I mean, we said the statistic before, you know, for every Black girl that experiences rape, 15 don't report. We have to start asking those questions of why. And then when you think about the normalization of pedophilia, of sexual abuse, et cetera, it kind of helps explain why women are scared to do that. And like justifiably so, because they think that nobody is going to hear them, that they're going to get blamed for that situation, causing even more trauma than what they're currently facing.
Definitely. I mean, as a society, we just don't create a welcoming environment for victims to tell their stories. and to speak up in general. You know, it's just very harsh. Mm-hmm. You know, the internet, Twitter specifically, it's really only a small set of people who try to support victims. You know, I'm thankful that the people I follow, it's a very comforting, welcoming atmosphere. You know, the people I follow support and believe women when they say stuff.
Yeah.
You know, but I know that that's not the mainstream point of view. You just know that it's not, so many more people don't believe Meg, yes. You know, Megan Thee Stallion, than actually do believe her. And also, I think a lot of times, I think this is also a general thing, Black community, society at large, there is a tendency to just shift blame, but also do it in a way that like trying to find character flaws in the girls who yeah. are victims, yeah. you know? And it's like, you can have your qualms with someone, but still consider them a victim.
Yes, you can.
You know? And even thinking of the Meg situation, I know people try to bring in, well, I don't like her music, or I don't think she has a good personality, or I don't like what she posts on Instagram. I think she does too much. Okay, you can have those opinions. I'm not saying you have to like her. I'm not. I'm just saying we have to believe victims when they speak, and you can't use any of these extra little things to try to justify you victim blaming.
Exactly. Exactly. I think that's so well said. And, you know, in this conversation, I don't want it to get lost that, you know, of course, pedophilia and of course, sexual abuse does happen to all women, you know, women of all races and backgrounds, et cetera. But I think what we're trying to highlight here is because Black girls are already operating in a society that has consistently shown that they don't support them, that they don't see them as victims, what they experienced becomes amplified and their voices become even more siloed. And I think we all famously know how that has operated within the Me Too movement. And a lot of the prominent cases and stories were those of white women, which of course they deserve justice and of course they deserve their spotlight, but so do other Black women and so does the founder of the movement, Tarana Burke, who is commonly left to the sidelines in the background. So I think it's just interesting, not interesting, but I think it's important to just understand how when we intersect race and pedophilia and we look at what happens to Black girls, it is just something that's not being talked about, and it's a really serious situation. And I think also getting back to the point of why Black girls are scared and why they may feel that they can't come forward is also because Black women, Black girls are in something called a double bind, meaning that they're grappling with both their gender and their race. And thinking about how, as a society, we know the perceptions that people have of Black men, that, you know, they're criminals, thugs, et cetera, et cetera. And so you also get trapped into this thinking of, well, if I give up, like the person, if I, you know, share who it was that caused me this abuse, that caused me this trauma, that caused me this pain, well, what's going to happen to him? And is my community going to turn on him because, you know, I'm selling out a Black man? And you then get into this bind of feeling like you have to protect, you know, Black men, but doing it at the expense of your own well-being.
Oh, wow. Say that again. I mean, that is something we see time and time again. And I think that Black women are really expected to put their race before their womanhood mm-hmm. and, you know, their gender. Whereas Black men, a lot of times, I don't even think they realize it, but they do put their manhood and their gender ahead of being Black. You know, if everyone was operating for the benefit of Black people and the benefit of the race, we wouldn't have these issues. But obviously there's a gender divide that is really separating us. And, you know, that politics of gender is really getting in the way mm-hmm. of us achieving real change and real justice. And I mean, I know, I feel like I always bring her up and I literally just talked about her, but Megan Thee Stallion in so many ways is like a perfect case study for a lot of the things that we talk about on this podcast. The situation with Tory Lanez, the violence against her in that situation, she didn't come forward immediately because she wanted to protect him.
Yes.
And that delay in her reporting it, almost people felt like damaged her credibility. Mm-hmm. I don't think it does, but, you know, people expect you to, you know, the minute something happens, they think you're supposed to be tweeting about it. But she was like, I wanted to protect him. She was like, we just had this whole movement. We just had, you know, seen what happened to Breonna Taylor. We've seen what happened to George Floyd. She was like, I didn't want to put another Black man just in the criminal system. But she's like, I'm realizing now, after Tory Lanez's like despicable behavior regarding the situation and him lying about it, she's like, I realize now I should have came immediately with my story. And yeah. Also, she was prevented because a hostile environment in society, people were just prone to not believe her. And not only, that's not even the first time that something like that has happened with her.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about this before, but I don't know if we said it on the podcast, but we talked about this together. But a few years ago, she talked about this on her Instagram Live pretty recently, but it took place a few years ago where her and her ex-boyfriend got into like a domestic dispute and they were outside. And I believe that the boyfriend had cheated on her and gotten another woman pregnant, and she had just found out. And so she was livid. The situation got physical between both of them, and the police come, the police roll up, and the police ask Megan, ma'am, did he hit you? She's visibly bruised, visibly, you know, looks like she just got roughed up. She says, no, officer, he did not hit me. Mm-hmm. The officer turns to him, turns to the boyfriend, sir, did she touch you? Yes, officer, she beat me up, she hit me. Megan is handcuffed, goes to jail, boyfriend scot-free. And she did that only to protect him. Where's the reciprocity?
Where is it? Where is it? And when we say Black women are unprotected, this is what we mean. That is exactly what we mean. And
it's a double bind.
It's a double bind. And it's sad that you have to even grapple with that. And it's sad that intersectionality isn't just a part of our language and our just knowledge of how we need to support all Black people, all people of this race or that race. I mean, at this point, it should just be inherent. Like, it should be innate. Like, it should not, you shouldn't have to think twice. You talk about reciprocity. And again, it's like, where is the protection? Where is the support? It's just not there. And, you know, it's sad, but again, the liberation of all Black people will not be achieved just by only focusing on the issues of Black men. While they are important, while they are obviously something that we have to address, when you leave women out of the picture, you can visibly see everything else that's going to come with that. And it's not going to be liberation. And how sad is it that Black women are doing so much underground work, so much grassroots work for these overarching Black Lives Matter movements, and yet there still is no reciprocity to our needs and to our intersectional experiences.
And I also have to say, this just, like, I just thought of this, like, I think that people are worried about the wrong thing being the division between Black people. People see the calling out of the crime as a division, when in reality, the division is the fact that Black men are perpetrating crimes against Black women. Mm-hmm. If you are taking sick, sexual assaulting, sexual abusing behavior, pedophilic behavior against Black women, that's the problem there.
Yeah.
The problem is not then when girls and women step forward about it.
Yes.
And I think that people get so mad about the call out, but it's like, no, if you're going to be loud and do these things against me, I can be loud when I'm speaking up and telling my truth.
Yes. And also too, I know one thing that we always say to each other, but multiple things can exist at once.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So yes. You can be deserving of having people not call you criminal, of people not doing all of the atrocities that are done to Black men, but you still can be pedophilic. You can still inflict harm and sexual abuse on somebody. Both things can be true.
Both can be true. And I think that obviously we need to have outrage when unarmed Black men get killed.
Period.
But if a Black man actually committed a crime against somebody, there could be a justified call out there. You need to be held accountable. Just because of your race doesn't mean you can't be held accountable. I just think that there needs to be a reevaluation of what we're getting mad at as a community. Obviously, if people are assuming things based on racist stereotypes,
right?
Come on now, we all know that that's wrong. Two things can exist at the same time, and they don't have to cancel each other out. They can just be,
mm-hmm.
you know?
They can.
Not all Black men are criminals. We know that. But also not all Black men are innocent, and that has nothing to do with their skin color, though. That just has to do with their own actions.
Mm-hmm. In a different form of violence and oppression that is operating at the same time as racism. Yes. And we have to tackle both things at once, and that's just the reality.
Yes.
Right? Because what, you get to this point of many people aren't racist anymore, but there's still so much gender violence. Like, you know, we can't substitute tackling one issue for the other. They have to happen simultaneously in a recognition of what the blending of those experiences, you know, does and looks like. And particularly in this instance, what that means for Black girls.
Yeah.
And, you know, one thing I also just want to mention as well is that, you know, some of the main drivers to the juvenile justice system, for the carceral system for Black girls, are also rooted in sexual abuse, truancy cases, which can oftentimes be linked to sexual abuse that girls experience or other abuse that they're experiencing at home. So this is also driving them into the criminal justice system. And, you know, I know we've mentioned this before, but Black girls are the fastest growing population in the juvenile justice system. So I think it's just these are very real implications, and you have a spiraling of other problems when gender does go unaddressed in the Black community. And I think it's really important that we see this. We must act now and quickly to really just think about everything that's contributing to this.
Yeah. We need a radical change right now. And I think that sometimes it's frustrating with a lot of aspects of, you know, Black Lives Matter and just like the social awakening of a lot of people. It's like I just wish we could kind of speed through this learning phase.
Yeah.
Because it's like, we should have learned this by now. Why are we still in a phase where people need to read books? Why are we still in a phase where people have to learn how to give people decent, basic respect? That should have been done. So I'm just confused. And I know it's a long process, but this needs to start coming second nature to people. And I think that people are making excuses for themselves so they don't have to learn this new behavior. And they're still trying to keep their old, you know, old ways tolerated. And we're just not tolerating it anymore. And I just know in the next coming years, people are going to get very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And very upset because, you know, even past racism and the patriarchy, like, it's going to be an environmental reckoning. It's going to be, you know, about ableism. That's going to have a reckoning. Like, all these things are going to come at the same time. Socioeconomic justice, all of these things, I don't think people are ready for it.
I don't think so either.
Yeah, white supremacy, all of this stuff stems from white supremacy. And I think that that's where the division idea comes from. But like I said before, people are focused on the wrong thing as a divisive thing. It's not about the call out or the holding people accountable. It's about the actual crimes. And until we agree on like a moral code of conduct and like have a new and improved just cultural movement, we're going to be separated. And that's what white supremacy wants. So Black men always say that, like, you're trying to keep us apart and tear us apart and make us look bad in front of the white man. No, we're calling you out on actual toxic, disgusting, abusive behavior. That's what's happening. That's not tearing us apart. That's bringing us together.
Yeah, and yes, exactly. Calling them out in the pursuit of desiring community, of wanting community, of trying to achieve community. Because guess what? When we really start to address the harms that are being done, and when everything is laid out on the table, all the intersectionalities and all the ways in which we failed people of certain identities, then we build community, and then that's when we could really rise up, and that's when we could really do something, as you mentioned before. But until we are so scared to think about the harm that we've inflicted and what we've done wrong, and we're so scared and we want to coddle people and we don't want to call people out for stuff, we're never going to get to that ultimate finish line. It has to be a period of uncomfortability. It has to be addressing the ways in which you've been conditioned to think about structural wrongs and things that have, you know, that have roots in white supremacy and other things like that. It's about our thinking that I think is really important. There's just so much that needs to be unpacked. And I think we all just kind of have to enter these conversations and enter these next phases of life with an open mind about thinking about how we've been conditioned, about thinking about our own personal actions and if they're contributing to somebody else's oppression. I think those are all really important things that we have to think about. And I mean, that goes back to the purpose of what this podcast is, right?
Yeah, it's about having these uncomfortable conversations and creating this discourse and having it be a safe space for everyone listening to self-reflect, us included, you know? I mean, I feel like I say this every episode, but we're never exempt. And we are also always growing as well. This is just us kind of talking, stream of consciousness, getting our ideas out there so other people can start having these conversations as well. And whether you are a Black man, Black woman, white person, or just non-Black person listening to this podcast, there's something in here for everyone.
Yes.
Everyone needs to do better in terms of listening to Black women and also listening to women, period.
Mm-hmm. That is right. Oh, I think that this topic it's just extremely needed. And I never want it to be the situation where it takes a Surviving the R. Kelly docuseries to come out, or it takes a situation like Meg for all this discourse to then bubble up again. I just want this to be a part of the conversation, and I want these things to be dismantled and part of our understanding of racism and part of our understanding of what's going on, because they're all intertwined.
Yeah. And last point, just to your point, like, there's been enough violence. We've had enough case studies.
Right.
That we don't need more for people to learn. We've had enough violence in the community and in society against Black women that we don't need any more for people to learn. And I think some people are like procrastinating the learning, being like, well, I'll get it next time. No, let's look back on the mistakes and the violence that has been done so we don't have to experience it again.
Exactly. Exactly. And again, if your ultimate pursuit is liberation, you're going to have to realize that there's a lot that's going to have to come with that. It's not going to be easy, and it's not going to be just existing within your bubble and staying there, especially if you carry some kind of privilege in this conversation.
Of course.
So.
Wow. We could keep going with this series, but we'll let you all ruminate on the episodes we've given you thus far. Obviously, this is a never-ending conversation, so engage with us on our Instagram, on our Twitter. Y'all know the handles. I'm not going to say them today. Figure it out. You can find them somewhere. They'll be in the show notes. We'll also link some articles for you all to read. Thank you all for listening. We have some great episodes, great, great guests coming up. So please stay tuned for the rest of our season. This series is finally concluded, but we'll be bringing you very great episodes coming up soon.
Yes. All right. Bye, everyone. Thank you.
Bye.